Good morning. Hey, I want to say thank you to Cherie Rivera for leading us in worship this morning. Wasn't that great? Man, if that didn't draw you in, if she didn't draw you in worship, you just need to make sure you even have a pulse right now. Oh, man, it's good to see you guys. So today we're going to open up the vault today, and we're going to go back. We're going to go back to a series we did about 5 years ago. Hard to believe it was 5 years ago already. But the title certainly actually does date it a little bit. MySpace. Some of you are like, MySpace? I don't even know what MySpace is, right? So we'll just call it Facebook today or something. Anyway, but this was a series where we explored what our relationships with our families and our marriages, our friendships, what our relationships might look like if we were to intentionally live for one another instead of just for ourselves. And it was a series about turning really MySpace, making MySpace truly our space as a family, as a friend, as a community, whatever it might be. And one of the topics we talked about was the subject of family. Turn to the person next to you right now. Say, family. Yeah, family. Now, family is an interesting thing. We can all relate to family, right? Because we all have one. You may not like yours, but we all have a family, right? And no, chances are you're very thankful for the family that God has given you. I mean, I know for me, I feel extremely blessed and fortunate to have the family that I have. I felt like God really, one of the greatest gifts God has ever given me is the gift of family. Yet at the same time, we also know that family can be a source of challenge, right? Difficulty at times. It can be. Our families can be challenging. And so today we're going to talk a little bit about families. And in particular, we're going to talk about a certain type of family. We're going to talk about blended families. And we'll explain a little bit more what blended families are, what those look like in just a second. But I'm excited because we're going to do two kind of cool things today. One is we're going to give you an opportunity to help guide where we go this morning. So we're going to give you a chance to ask your questions. And so as soon as those questions start coming into your mind, you can start texting those. It's very easy. We're actually giving you permission to use your phone during church. Some of you do it anyway, but I'm praying for you. So no, I'm kidding. But if you want to be a part of it, it's very simple. You just take your cell phone out and you text the word orchard. You don't have to put that plus sign, just the word orchard and then your question to 62953. And every time you text, you're giving a $100 donation to the Orchard, by the way. No, I'm totally kidding. You're not. But I welcome you to do that. Just stay for the next service or just come see me and give me the check. Anyway, no, I'm kidding. So I want to encourage you to start texting as soon as those questions start going through your mind. But I'm also excited because I have invited a friend of mine to be with us today to join in on this conversation. His name is Doug McKinley, and you guys are gonna love Doug. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Doug holds a doctorate degree in clinical psychology. So if he starts staring at you for very long, be nervous. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally joking. A master's degree in counseling. He is a leadership consultant. He's the founder and president of a organization called Associates in Family Care, which is a very successful counseling and therapy organization that is now in four locations, including right here in Aurora. And I've asked Doug to join us because this is a topic I think Doug knows a lot about and can really speak some great wisdom to us. Really the ultimate question is, how do we have a well-blended family, a family that can really be united and be the kind of family God created it to be? And so I'm excited to have Doug here. Would you give a warm Orchard welcome this morning to Dr. Doug McKinley? Thanks, Doug. Thank you. Appreciate it, man. Well, Doug, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it. And we had a great time last night, didn't we?
We did.
But we've hung out a lot this week.
We have.
It wasn't yesterday. It was the day before. Mm-hmm. We were eating greasy pepperoni pizza in a little Italian restaurant in New Jersey, out of all places. And we were out there for, I serve on the board of Triple Threat. Some of you have heard of Triple Threat. Woo-hoo. Oh, yeah. Come on, you guys. I'm glad Caleb's not here this morning. Anyway, no, but Triple Threat's a fantastic organization, mentoring organization, and so we were out connecting with the some of the executive folks at Power Bar Company.
Yeah, cool place. So
yeah, real cool place. So Doug, thanks for being here. And I would say, I want to start out just by saying that I think probably to some degree, all of us in some way are a little bit familiar with what a blended family is, because I suppose when we get married, you do blend, don't you? All of a sudden you have these in-laws and you have this other family, because you're not just marrying this person, you are marrying into a family. And that can become a little bit complicated sometimes. But blended families even go far beyond that. So I guess what I want to ask you is, could you help define for us, what is a blended family? What does it look like?
Actually, I like that definition. Really, all of us that get married do join into a blended family. So we've created this psychological or sociological term, but in reality, it's true. So essentially, a blended family is when the ideal traditional marriage didn't work out, and two people fall in love, and they come together with children from previous marriages. Then we have the Brady Bunch, right? Our age here? Some of you not know who the Brady Bunch is? That would be really scary to me.
You guys, if you're really young, you need to watch the Brady Bunch. Cause
that was a good show.
I mean, for one, like, let's just be honest. Marsha, she's cute. All right? And Marsha. Anyway.
So blended families often are the typical blended family, of course, is when a woman and man come together and you have a couple of children on each side. But there's other scenarios. Sometimes, actually, in the sociological term of blended family, I became a blended family last spring when my 73-year-old mother decided to marry an 81-year-old man.
Wow.
Yes. She's a hoot. Dad had passed away in 2001, and she was, you know, grieving, and really we were all, you know, wondering what she might do. And she said, well, I need to do something with my life, so let's find an 81-year-old. So he's a hoot. And I had that awkward conversation with him where he said, can I call you son? And I'm like, no.
Only cannot. If I can call you grandpa, right?
Double grandpa, yeah. It was. So really, I love the way you introduced this, Scott. Maybe we're all part of a blended family. Specifically, we're going to talk about today some of the challenges of just how to bring that together and do it well.
Yeah.
Because that's what we all want to do. And it's not, none of our intention is to make life worse for our kids or for ourselves. Right. Anytime people get married, they want it to add value to their life. So.
But oftentimes, inadvertently, we do make it tough.
Yeah, we do.
Sometimes because of unrealistic expectations. I mean, all kinds of reasons. The diversity of blended families. Let me share a couple scenarios with you. You might have a widow who's married to a divorced man with children. You might have a single man who marries a divorced woman with kids. Or, as in the case with many of you, sometimes the children live with the biological parent, only visiting on the weekends or whenever it might be. Then on top of it, you've got the whole X factor, the ex-spouse, which sometimes can be a challenge. You guys are all looking at me like none of you know what that's about, but I know you do because you asked me to pray for that person. By the way, can I just say, don't ask me to pray for your ex and then be surprised when, like, they show up at the orchard wanting to know Christ. That always makes, yeah, I just want to throw that out there. I actually have had people say to me, like, doggone it, like, I prayed for my ex and, like, now they're going to church here. I'm like, well, we have three services, go to a different one that they go to. But anyway, so what was I saying? But the diversity of blended families is really interesting. But here's what I really believe. I really believe that the same thing, the same diversity that sits at the core of so many of the challenges and that oftentimes leads to things like complexities and competition are the very things, that same diversity is the very thing that has the potential, I think, to create and to complement and to complete this absolutely beautiful mosaic. So I think there's great hope for blended families. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. It's not first of all, Scott and I were talking earlier, the statistics are now, I read something a few years ago, by 2012, which we're getting close, that blended families will now represent more than 50% of our families nationwide. And, you know, if we took a poll in this audience, how many are from blended families, it would be 30 to 50%.
Well, let's do that right now. How many of you are from a blended family background or currently in a blended family? Would you just show us, raise your hand? Just look around real quick. Just raise your hand real high so you can see. Yeah, a lot of you in here. So this, I think this topic, and some of the things we're going to talk about today too, I think are even, well, is helpful for non-blended families as well. But let me throw this scenario out there. Let's say you have a woman who has two kids. She marries a man with one child. They get married. Everything seems fine, or at least, it seems fine. But the man, the husband, is not feeling the love from the stepchildren. And he feels it from his own, yeah. But he doesn't feel it from them. So he's struggling, doesn't know what to do. Can you talk to us? What would you say to someone maybe in that scenario?
To the man?
Doug? Yeah.
Well, first of all, it's probably something that would be unrealistic to expect that just because you love their mother, that they would love you. We have these crazy thoughts that, well, hey, everybody loves me. Why wouldn't they love me? There's lots of reasons why they might not initially think you're all that. And some of it may have to do with you, but most of it will have to do about the stories that they're making up in their mind of why this happened, why don't I have my father. It's just there's lots of projections going on. So the love is not going to come, it more than likely won't come quickly, and it may not come ever in the way that you hope ideal, but it can come and it can be beautiful just as long as you're willing to be with it.
That's good. And I think, like you said, it takes time. You know, I there's an email I want to read to you. Someone a while back, I had asked a few of our staff to share about their stories of being from a blended family. The ones who are, and this person said this in this email, I thought it was really good. They said, it takes time to show someone you want to invest in them and spend time loving them. It takes time. Say that with me, ready? It takes time. People, especially children and stepchildren, are not always quick to trust love from someone who is new to their life and family circle. So it's not necessarily a personal issue? It's not, because we obviously it'd be very easy to take that very personal and say, what's wrong with me? But the fact is, it doesn't matter who it is. There's probably going to be that. It's going to take time.
A lot of time.
Yeah. They go on to say this. It takes a lot of time to establish a relationship that is normally developed the first day a child is born. So step-parents have to be, this is so good, listen, step-parents have to be confident and patient with the kids, with themselves, and with their spouse. That's great wisdom. Because when parenting styles are combined, it takes time to take his and hers and find ours in the areas of love, discipline, reward, manners, expectations, etc. It takes time.
Yeah, it's. I love both of the words, time and patience. I was trying my patience last night just getting out of the parking lot here. If you want to turn left out of this place, that's crazy. How long does it take? It's like 40 minutes,
that
I think,
light,
to turn left.
I don't know. It's. I usually just go. No, I'm kidding. I don't.
I stayed there because I was in front of a church. Otherwise, I would have gone. Patience is such an interesting thing. We live in you know, it's a cliche. We live in such a fast-paced thing. And we want everything to work out right now and yesterday. So patience in relationships. Think about, this is a forced relationship.
Yeah.
It's forced. It's not what you wanted. It's not what they wanted. It just kind of happened because of the blending of the families. So you really do have to give that relationship, not the person. Let me make a little shift here. Give the relationship time to develop. When we focus on the child that you're trying to build a relationship on, if you're looking at it from that angle, or if you're a child and you're thinking about how do I form a relationship with my new step-parent, those things just have to take time, and they have to be organic and natural. You can't force them. Confidence, I think, is another thing that I like whoever wrote this. You really have to not personalize things and just be confident that, you know, other people have figured out how to like you. We don't know how, but they did. They figured out how to like you, and this child will too if you're confident and just being authentic rather than trying to shape something.
I think this is so good because this is some things that I don't think you're always going to hear, especially if you're in a position where you're considering getting remarried. It's not just about preparing to be married. It's preparing for some of the challenges you are going to face and being very realistic about that. Let's talk about that for a second. Let's talk about that second marriage because I hear all the time people will say, you know, hey, we're in love. And I talked about this last weekend. We want to get married, so we must be ready to get married. And so when couples say to me, hey, we're in love, we want to get married, I think, especially in a blended family scenario, it's not just about whether or not you're ready, but I think the question is, are your children ready for you to get married? I'm not saying do they 100% embrace it and are they comfortable with it, but are the children ready to get married? Now, this leads to a question that someone asked here I want to throw out to you, Doug. Let me find it here. Maybe I lost it. Hold on a second. Yeah, here we go. My girlfriend and I are both divorced with kids and thinking of getting married. Are there reasons not to get married that we should be concerned about? Maybe I think what they're asking is, like, what are things they need to consider? It'd be easy to assume that they're, well, if we want to get married, so we should get married.
If the question is specific to stepchildren, or there's lots of reasons not to get married.
I mean, we should just talk about that for a second. Give us a few of those.
Well, I think if you don't like the person, that helps. I do assessments called the Prepare Inventory, and the Prepare Inventory has 10 categories that we look at the compatibility of people, and there's often people that are marking like one time out of 10 that they agree with their partner, and yet they've set their wedding date. And I'm like, Right. Dude, you don't even like this person. You're going to get married?
Right.
So be realistic about, is this something that is you know, born out of love? And if you're a Christian, that God has absolutely called you into. But as it relates to stepchildren, boy, there's just lots of questions you need to ask and be a part of asking your children. What do you think about being a part of a new family and begin to give them the vision of that possibility?
What about baggage? Let's just face it. I mean, when we go through painful things in life, we tend to start collecting the Louis Vuitton, right? Mm-hmm. And how do couples make sure before they get married that they are not, I think there's always going to be baggage to some degree, but how do they make sure they're in a healthy enough place emotionally, spiritually? What are some some signs to look for, questions to ask?
Well, the biggies are, if you're not, communication is just absolutely critical. And if you're having difficulty with basic communication and the four germs that I call, if you're involved in criticism, contempt, defensiveness, or stonewalling, there's actually research out in the Love Lab out in Seattle by John Gottman who looks at these four things, and he and his team can predict divorce at a north of 90% rate based on how couples fight.
Wow. What were those again? Can you tell us again?
So criticism. Is there a critical spirit in your conversation? I call it a germ. Is that germ present in your relationship? Contempt, is there literally, are you trying to hurt each other? When couples fight, there's conflict that's really healthy where you're trying to work through something, and then there's fighting when you're getting nasty.
Yeah.
And some people really think fighting is such a normal thing. That kind of fighting is not normal. It's actually very harmful. Mm. When there's criticism, contempt, defensiveness is a way that, unfortunately, a lot of people just think is normal, but it really is destructive in communication. If you're feeling defensive, you need to stop the conversation, end it right now. And this doesn't matter whether it's in marriage or a coworker or a family member or friend. Stop the conversation because there's over a 95% chance that conversation will end bad. And then stonewalling is where you ignore each other, and we make fun of it on sitcoms and TV, but this is absolutely devastating to relationships when you're so not worth my time, I'm not even going to talk to you. And some couples tell me it goes on for days, weeks, where you don't, then you end up on the Jerry Springer show. I haven't talked to my wife in 40 years. It's horrible.
That's extremely horrible. Nervous laughter right there, right? Oh, jeez.
So there's a lot. That communication is the big thing. If you can't, because communication is how trust is built.
Yeah.
So trust and respect are the two biggies. If trust and respect are not shaping nicely in that relationship, then stop your wedding plans, get counseling. I don't know what Orchard does, but I actually really encourage couples to talk to their pastors, to get involved in a small group and somewhere where they can actually get some outside feedback on their relationship.
Yeah.
So we can go all day on that.
We actually send most of them to you guys.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah, and you guys have a great program.
We have a premarital package where we'll do some assessments and a few counseling sessions. And if there is baggage, if there's real baggage, I'm not talking about the light kind you carry on, but the ones you got to check in, at the plane. If you got that kind of baggage, you need to go and at least understand what it means and why it's there. it may take years to unpack that, but it's important. Don't do nothing. Doing nothing is worse than anything.
That's so good. That man, everything he just said, that was worth the price of admission right there. That was so good. Here's a question. I want to jump into a question here real quick. I think this is so good. By the way, for couples who are thinking about getting remarried, I think one thing they oftentimes don't understand is the impact that the remarriage has, that what that does with kids. And I've heard before that the remarriage can actually be more devastating than the divorce itself. Do you think that's true?
It's not always true, but it certainly, depending on the circumstances, I've had multiple cases where kids get that sense that, oh, I knew they were divorced, but didn't feel final. One girl I can think of specifically, she was 14, and she was talking to me, and she's like, you know, now I have to really, it really is real to me, and now this thing feels like, you know, help me, Dr. McKinley, how do I get this? Because so far it's kind of been, you know, I got the Disney dad, and I got the mom, and I got the whole thing going on, it's fun. But now it's ending. The fun's over, now I got to deal with a real person.
Yeah.
So it can be trouble. Everybody handles things differently. That divorce time is shocking and difficult, depending on what age the kids are. It depends.
By the way, these conversations look different from last night. Next service will look different. You may want to come back or down. Well, I think what we should do is post all of them online. Because here's a question that I know we didn't talk about last night, but I think is so good. Someone asked, I feel compelled to adopt, but my husband feels he can never love an adopted child as he would love his own. Mm. How can we work through this? Isn't that a great question?
That is a great question. Adoption is a very popular thing right now. A lot of families are, and it's really cool. I love the fact that our people are rallying for these kids. I think, again, it's back to that communication and building trust and respect between husband and wife, and how do you make any decisions? This is a big one. Even having children. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed couples over the years where they've decided not to have children. Do you know how hard that is in our culture, to choose not to have children? It's like there's something wrong with you. But I have a lot of respect for couples that have that conversation, make the decision, we're just not going to have children, and here's the reasons why, and good for you.
Yeah.
Because just having them just because of the 2.5 car and the children is not a good reason. So I would say it's the same kind of conversation you'd have should we have children at all.
Yeah.
It is more complicated, and for that person, I'm told that an adopted child, I didn't think when my son was born, I never thought I could love my second child the way I did my first.
Yeah.
Does anybody feel that way? I mean, it was such a. I got a son. You know, it's like a huge thing. That whole thing is magical. And I remember thinking, honey, if you know, let's just have one. I can't imagine it being any better. And when Megan came along and our second child, it's amazing. I can't imagine. I mean, how could you imagine life? So adopting a child will be just another one of those transitions that you will go through. It's beautiful. I know lots of people that are adopted, and it's a. It's actually a great metaphor for this whole blended family thing, right?
Yeah, it really is.
It's God's design that we take care of one another, so it can work out. It's just as a couple, just talk about it. Be really honest with each other.
I have to say, I mean, most of you guys know I was adopted when I was a infant, and you know, I'm blown away at the love that I received from my parents. I'm sure that with my dad, I know it wasn't as easy to love me. I think he wanted to put me back up for adoption a few times. But I mean, he definitely found room in his heart to love me unconditionally, and my mom as well. And so,
I was blown away when you told me that this morning. I mean, that's just so cool. And kudos to mom back there. Well done. You've done a good job with your son.
Hey, mom. Stand up, mom. Stand up real quick. Stand up. Stand up.
I mean, it's just think of the love that those two had, and the intentionality to, you know, and both of you were adopted, you and your sister as well, to love them. And now, isn't it cool what Scott's doing with his ministry here at Orchard? I mean, God just knows. He knows. So you got to look past this. You got to see vision, and you got to look past the fears and
part
the stress.
Part of it's a trust issue that if God's telling you to do it, He will give you. I mean, yeah. So let's jump. There's so many things here we could talk about. Let's talk about the children for a second. You made a statement to me that I thought was so good. The kids will adjust to the same degree as their parents adjust.
Yeah, people ask me all the time, Doug, we want to do this right.
Yeah.
How do we do it? We're going to get married. You know, I have two kids. She has three. The best thing you can do for your kids is have a healthy relationship with each other. This really is true. We see this. I've been in this field 25 years. We do about 5,000 conversations a year through our four offices here in the Chicagoland. And we see this time and time again. They will adjust to the same degree that you create trust and respect with each other. To the same degree you don't do that, they will act out. Hmm. Does this make sense? It's not causative, but there's a lot of correlation. That doesn't say that if you have a great marriage relationship, your stepchildren will always get along.
Yeah.
I don't want to send that message, but they will adjust to the same degree that you do. It's just uncanny how mirroring that process is. So it's a huge deal.
Real quick, what would you say to kids right now, children who find themselves in a blended family situation, who are struggling to adjust? What would you say to any of the kids who are here now or listening online right now?
Yeah, so kids struggle for different reasons. Sometimes we actually talked about earlier. Sometimes kids are embarrassed that they have you know, like there's something wrong with them, that they have this step family. I'm embarrassed, so I don't know what to call this new person in my life. I think it's just really important for you as a child, depending on your age, but if you're able to take any time to reflect, is to find somebody that you can talk to. If you don't feel comfortable with your parent, your biological parent, then find a loved one, a friend, to just talk through what are those feelings. They're so normal.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something you asked for. It's a forced relationship. They're normal. Don't be afraid to tell somebody you're angry or you're confused or you want to run away. So children, just talk to somebody that can be a good listener for you. And I think secondly is you have to accept your new normal. And that's going to be difficult because it's like anything a parent does. My kids, when I say this is how it's going to be, they have to comply to the authority of the family. So you have to find your way into that place where you could say, okay, it's not my choice. When I was a junior in high school, I was I thought I was an athlete at that time. I found out later I was just a wannabe, but I was very involved in athletics, and my parents moved to another state between my junior and my senior year. Anybody have that happen? I mean, I was all conference, honorable mention my junior in football, and I was like,
that can be devastating.
I was set. It was brutal. And I just remember saying to my parents, really? Are you serious? I'm not going. Here is another. And so they actually let me stay with a friend to finish out the football season. But that was during a time when I had to say, this is how it's going. I'm actually a product of divorce. My parents divorced when I was 14, and they remarried each other when I was 16. Isn't that weird? I was my dad's best man. How's that? And then I sang at my mom's wedding when she married the 81-year-old. This life is crazy, you know? Go figure how that happens. So, kids, I guess the message is
now, what
kids.
TV show has that, huh?
Yeah, I think there's all kinds of... So, kids, just... talk to somebody, be open about it, but this is your journey. Try to jump in and go with it, whatever that is, because that's a life skill you're going to need as you grow up anyway.
Yeah. Let's talk about the D word, discipline.
Okay.
Discipline. Let me just ask, how many of you as parents, not just blended families, but struggle with discipline and knowing how to do it well, stay consistent? I'm raising my hand right now. Yeah, that's a big issue. Maybe you could just throw in there a little nugget for the non-blended as well. But what would you say to the blended families? Because there's a certain challenge with blended.
I'll start with the blended families, then I'll make a couple of nuggets for the non-blended. I'm actually pretty open-minded about most things, and I think that context is decisive for most families. But I'm not, on this issue, I'm not. I hands down believe that non-biological parents should not lead disciplinary actions in a stepfamily, period. Don't do it.
That's because you got to say that again, Doug.
It's a mistake. Non-biological parents should not lead discipline in the family. And I know there's biblical mandates for the man to be the lead of the house, but it just doesn't work. And in time, if the relationship builds trust and respect, you may earn that position and step into that. But I really strongly encourage the biological parent in every situation to lead in the discipline area. That's not to say you have to do it alone. You can mentor with each other and coach each other, but more fights, more conflict, more divisiveness happens when the non-biological parent is either introduced as the disciplinarian. That happens sometimes, that, oh, I'm married, I don't want to do that part. I'll hire somebody else to do it. Or they initiate and they intrude on the relationship in that way. And let me tell you, divorce rates are around 50%. I know people don't believe that, but it's true. Divorce rates for second and third marriages, when they include children, are upwards between 70 and 80%.
Wow.
And there's a reason for that. It's not just a statistical game. The reason is it's challenging if you don't follow some of these guidelines that can help guide you to do this better. But discipline, as a general rule, it's the problem that most parents in all families have with discipline is they forget that discipline is for learning. It's not an event. It's a life learning process.
And that's good. Discipline is not. That's good. It's not an event.
It's not an event. Most people want to control the situation right now. My child needs to comply. You know, I'm like the Borg on Star Trek. You will comply.
It's like WWF is starting right now.
That's right. We're going, and I'm winning this one. I don't care if I lose every battle, but today you're mine. Mm. And that event discipline doesn't work. For whatever reason, your ego, yourself, you're insecure. You feel like your child is. I have parents come in and tell me all the time, Scott, my 7-year-old is running my home. Kidding, they're running my home. I don't know what to do.
Kid CEO.
That's right. And they are. The reason they're running the home is because you're still in this power struggle with them. The general gem for discipline is that you have to realize it's a learning process, and you need to discipline for the purpose of learning, not to gain control.
Yeah.
So we can talk about discipline for hours, but that's a one thing, principle that I try to teach.
I see a pattern with the questions. We got to wrap up because of time.
Okay.
But let me just go through a couple of the questions just to, you know, I think it's good just for you to hear what kind of questions people are asking. My parents are separated. My dad has a girlfriend, and I like her, but not her kids. Is there a way to work around that? What is the best way to deal with the other parent that is not always easiest to deal with? My son's friend is in a blended family that is having some problems. How can I explain that blended families have different dynamics than traditional families? I feel embarrassed about my parents' divorce. Is that normal? Often my mom only wants to talk about what I did at my dad's house. Oh, and what my stepmom is like. Woo! That's not cool.
No.
I don't like to talk about this. How do I escape these? All right, we're stopping there because you got to talk about that for a second. Because that really sucks.
Which one? The one.
The one about
my dad's
mom's prying
to get information.
About yes, there. That is not good.
So essentially, the theme of all of these probably is we have to be responsible for our own stuff. It's really the biggest mistake that people make. One time, somebody asked me this question when I was at a large speaking event. They said, you know, "Doug, you've been working with people. Back then, it was 2 decades. Now it's 25 years. What's the one thing that prevents people from being emotionally healthy?" And it was interesting, I didn't even have to think about it, and that is people don't take responsibility for their own stuff, for their own emotions, for their own actions. You have to be responsible for your stuff in this process. So those themes, if you're a parent and you're trying to collect information from your child about your ex, what are you thinking? What is the goal here? How could that possibly end
that's
well?
That's so selfish. Is
it's
that not
very
selfish,
Doug? And you're really, I know why you're doing it. I do. I'm very trained at empathy because I have to do this and listening to people. But that's just pure selfishness.
Yes.
You have to get out of that and start saying, okay, what is my agenda? What do I need to accomplish? Why can't I get the courage to talk to them directly? Use the appropriate channels to talk to them, whether it's a mediator, often it's lawyers. Things like this. So I think the theme running through those last few questions are be responsible for how you manage your internal resources. Self-management is 50% of life. It really is. If you can't manage your own impulses, your own emotions, you're gonna have trouble in every aspect of your life, work, home, blended families.
Doug, people try to fix this in themselves all the time. They have good intentions. They want to do better, but they get in this cycle.
Right.
And I think sometimes half the challenge is knowing when to just reach out and ask for help.
Absolutely.
I want you to tell us about Associates in Family Care. Your mic is cutting out just a little bit, so I'm going to have you move your pack out front. Maybe it's getting blocked because I don't want anybody to miss this. But I want you to tell us about your practices, what you guys do. I'm a firm believer in counseling. One of the best decisions I ever made was to go to counseling. I give counsel all the time to people, so I got to make sure that I'm getting counsel in my own life. Mm-hmm. But there were things in my life I started to see that I wasn't proud of. I started seeing reactions towards people. I started seeing defensiveness in ways that I wasn't becoming the person that I really wanted to become. And so, you know, for me to be able to reach out wasn't an easy thing, you know, and I wanted to go find, you know, because I wanted to be able to sit down and just be brutally honest with a counselor who didn't know me, and
yeah.
I could even cuss a little bit if I needed to, and no, I'm kidding. Actually, I'm not, but some, I
they took notes about your cussing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
They had something to think about.
It's confidential, though, so it's fine. But anyway, I just want to encourage those of you here at the Orchard, don't be afraid to reach out. Don't be ashamed. If you need counseling, and probably more people need counseling than they realize, but tell us about your practice. It's a, you know, you are a follower of Christ, and you guys are built on Christian principles, and just tell us about your practice. And I want to talk about the survey before we go.
Yeah, so we have four offices: Aurora, Naperville, Downers Grove, and Lake Zurich. And I really like what Scott said. I actually, when my father passed away in 2001, I went right into counseling about 6 months afterwards. And I don't know why people avoid it. It is a great thing. Think about it. How often do you have somebody who has no agenda, that's paid to listen to you, that's empathetic, and that actually has some wisdom? It is a fabulous experience. Yeah. The stigma of counseling is an unfortunate ego defense. Because in our culture, we think we have to just do everything ourselves. And so, especially men, we're just pigs.
Yeah.
You know, we usually men get dragged in by their wives, and that's how they process this. It's getting better. So I want to echo what Scott said, that counseling really is a beautiful opportunity for you to sort out your life. I don't know that everybody needs counseling, but I will say we need somebody to sort our life out with. There is no me without we. And if you want to define me, you have to have an outside perspective, and what better safe way to do than a licensed counselor who gets that. So we have a website, and for this, just for the Orchard this weekend, we put up a survey on our website on blended families, and essentially all it's doing is asking you some questions that might sort out whether you need to, you know, just talk to somebody, a friend or family, or maybe a professional counselor might be a good recommendation for you. If you fill out the survey, one of our staff will call you back and give you the results and talk to you about the possibilities. And counseling is not always recommended. Everybody thinks it.
Well, you guys need to take advantage of this. This is a free tool. You go to associatesandfamilycare.com. For those of you who are listening online, click on Blended Families, take the survey. We're going to post this on our Facebook site as well. And so I want to encourage you to do that, because what will happen, like you said, they'll receive a phone call and some consultation.
Yeah.
And I'll say this about Doug and his organization. They're the real deal, these guys. And they really, at the very heart and core of what they're doing, is a love for people. This is not a scene just as a business. I know you, and I know that you have a real heart to help people. And sometimes I know, you know, insurance oftentimes will cover counseling fees, and sometimes they don't, though. And there's always a concern of like, well, man, I can't afford it. Well, dear Lord, I mean, this is your life. This is your family. So I think actually you can't afford not to if you really need the help. So I would encourage you to follow up.
And
with
we'll
that.
Work with you. If you don't have the resources, we have options that we can do. We'll have you come see Scott, and we'll only charge like $20 an hour. So
listen,
we got all kinds of options.
You don't want that. People
That's
need
why I'm only charging 20.
People need counseling after I after counsel them.
So it is. And thank you very much. And we are, all of our staff are Christ followers. And we don't promote as, you know, we're like a Bible-thumping Christian therapy center. We're all professionally trained and licensed. And we would love to help you sort that out. If you don't want to step to counseling, please turn and talk to somebody. Find a loved one. Find a friend. get in conversation in your communities and your small groups. It's just such a healthy thing. In fact, Larry Crabb is one of my mentors. He really wishes we could do away with therapy, that the church and the community would, could go back to its healing properties. And I'm a big fan of that. I'm glad that we have this as an option.
Yeah.
So thank you. One of the things I did want to say is blended families can be amazing. I have lots of friends that are in blended families. I don't want anybody to leave here today thinking, wow, it's terrible.
Or second tier, whatever. Yeah.
It's not. We're all blended.
Yeah.
I'm certainly blended. I've been blended several times. I'm still trying to figure that out. So.
Well, amen. I appreciate you saying that. I have to believe that God's idea of a blended family is a family that takes all of the unique personalities and differences and dysfunctions, whatever you want to call them, and all the weird ways of doing things and et cetera, and over time allows God to take all of those things and form together a very beautiful mosaic that truly complements and completes one another in the family. I have to believe that's the picture. And when I look out across this room, when I look at it, open up the scriptures, when I look back at history, when I think of the billions and billions and billions of people who are all from unique and different backgrounds with issues and sins, and who even through all of that, God still loved unconditionally. And God still forgave, God still accepted, God still embraced, and God calls you his very own. And I think to myself, that right there is a beautiful example of our Heavenly Father, who's really the father of the largest blended family exist.
That is the
family of Christ that we are all a part of. And so perhaps I think the best way to maybe end this time is by in prayer. What I'd like to do, Doug, is ask you to pray for those, specifically those who are in a blended family situation right now. There's a lot of hurt. There's a lot of the questions have to do with kids. And, man, last night we got asked a couple tough questions from some kids who were here. And so I think we need to pray. My prayer is Romans 15:5, where Paul says, "May God, who gives this patience and encouragement, help you to live in complete harmony with one another." That's my prayer for every one of you in your family, whether you're blended or not. But, Doug, would you close us out, and let's pray for God's hand to be upon these families.
It's an honor to be in your community this morning, Father, and thank you for, even on the drive here, for allowing me to be with you. And teach each of us to notice that your ever-encircling presence is available to us 24/7. It's just an amazing reality. And as the worship song talked about, just the love that you give us allows us to love others.
Yes.
And it's only because of that we can be effective at these blended families. So I do pray specifically for, I love the questions from the children today. Lord, give these young people the wisdom to ask questions, to assert themselves. They're often very afraid that they'll be misunderstood or neglected. Give them the courage to ask questions, to speak out, and to talk to somebody about some of this. And Father, I pray specifically for all parents.
Yes.
We're all in blended families, but specifically that are challenged with this blended family dynamic. Help us to be people that take responsibility for our emotions, for our walk with you. Just help us to be who we want others to be. Help us to be the change that we demand from others. Help us just be that person, to be healthy in the way that we can. And we're screwed up. We know that. We can't do that without your help. No amount of psychologists are going to get us there. And although we fancy having that tool in our toolbox that we could fix it, you're the great fixer. You're the great healer. And we submit ourselves to you this morning. In your name, amen.
Amen.